Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.
Mihael Glavoger, Gloria Kurb. Po velemestih, filmu o preživetvenih strategijah marginalcev v svetovnih metropolah in Smrti delavca, v katerem smo med drugim zijali v baročno razbohotene podobe klavcev na nigerijski mesni tržnici, je avstrijski režiser Mihael Glavoger posnel še film o prostituciji. Podobno kot omenjena filma je tudi Glorio Kurb zasnoval večdelno v obliki triptiha, ki raziskuje vsakodnevne prakse prostitucije na treh prizoriščih. V Bangkoku na Tajskem, Faridpuru v Bangladešu in v mehiškem obmejnem mestecu Reynosi. Gloria Kurb tako zaključuje ohlapno trilogijo o fizičnem delu v 21. stoletju, s katero se je Glavoger uveljavil kot eden izmed prodornejših dokumentaristov zadnjega časa. Z režiserjem smo se pogovarjali pred ljubljansko premiero filma, ki si ga lahko ogledate v kinu še do prihodnje srede. Ker je Gloria Kurb triptih, oltarna slika, in ker je prisotnost religije, bodi si katolicizma, islama ali budizma, mogoče čutiti skoraj v vsakem kadru, smo pogovor začeli na relaciji religija, seks, prostitucija.
If you can't give a blowjob because your mouth has spoken the Quran, then there is a definite influence. And also like the simplicity and casuality of Buddhism also has an influence by not taking sex so serious. Or like Catholicism also has an influence by making us feel guilty about sex, and on the other hand we can be forgiven. So I also think the whole film of Horse Glory on the surface is a film about prostitution, but more it might be a film about the encounter of men and women and sexual gestures or procedures in a given culture, and a given culture always also means a given religious culture, especially in places where the religion is so strong as in Islamic countries, or where it's felt so strong as in Mexico, where, as you say, cult, but it's actually an official deity, the Santa Muerte. The Catholic Church would never allow this in any other country, but in Mexico they allow it because they are so fearful of losing their last like big community. But still, this has an influence when death is with you, when you're very casual or very oppressed by religion. And also the practical thing that how they do it in Thailand, like every go-go bar in Bangkok has a bottle of whiskey that says handwritten Buddha whiskey. So every day they would give to the Buddha what they like, you know, a bottle themselves. Of Coke, some cigarettes, some flowers, some whiskey, you know, and they offer. But they want something. It's like nobody in Catholicism or other religions would dare to pray outrightly in the way, give me a lot of customers. Please let me have a lot of money. Please let me be happy. You know, it's not very transcendent. Maybe they do, but it's rare, I think. These like gestures were much more important for me than the issue of prostitution. Because I don't think it makes sense. I think there is no moral question about prostitution. Because prostitution is a human fact. People sell their sex for whatever reasons. If they are forced, if they are forced by society or by their circumstances, if they want to do it, if they think it's an easy way to make money for whatever reason. That, I think, is not interesting. I think it's interesting how it works. And how it works in the daily life shows a lot about the relationship of men and women in any given culture. And there it gets interesting. Not who cares if I'm for prostitution or against prostitution. I can be 100 years against prostitution. It always will be.
V Faridpuru v Bangladešu več kot 600 prostitutk živi in dela v getu, klaustrofobičnemu mestu radosti, ki ga v celoti obvladujejo matere oziroma lastnice deklet.
It's still a place where the mothers care for their girls. They are the pimps, but they care for the girls. They even treat them bad, but they care for them. They are a roof. To be out on the street is something totally different. It's both at the same time. It's a safe haven and a prison. You're never expelled. You can be bought out by a customer and brought back or sold back. They treat you as a ware, as something they sell, as a merchandise. Mm-hmm. But once you're in, you always can come back. You either grow to be a mother, to be somebody who owns girls and makes a good living, or you clean. If the mother becomes a very powerful mother, if she's willing to buy a lot of girls as opposed to have your own daughter, which is a lot cheaper, if she's not forced by sheer necessity of survival, she has to really, really fight for that. And hardly anybody manages. In the subcontinent and in all of Asia, the rule of the game is that your child can only raise one step in society if your own generation only sacrifices to the child. So they give you a cleaning lady and you want to send her to a decent school. You have to sacrifice everything you do for that. Otherwise, you don't succeed. And within Bangladesh, and this brothel is even harder. Some women now get very smart because they don't fall in love with customers, which normally happens because they are so young. And the customers are young too. It's like a schoolyard. So of course they fall in love. Everybody with 16 years old falls in love. You know. And when they fall in love, they become stupid. They don't ask for money, they let them marry them, take them out, but then after 3 years they say, you're a whore, let's go back, then they have no money. But if they're smart, and from the age of 19 or 20 on, become mothers themselves, and with their money buy girls, then they can make it with their own daughter. But normally, when they're 40, they don't have real money, and then the best thing to have is a daughter. Because you don't have to buy. Also, the perception is also, for a lot of people who see the film Mexico is Hell, or the place where it's the worst. For me, it's the other way around. I mean, I conceive Mexico as a heartfelt place. But the way it looks, and the way the drugs and everything. So, and the first part where every man thinks, you know, these girls look great. It's interesting because like the Mexican prostitutes, when they saw the film, they said, we want to never live like that.
Because of the glass.
Because of the glass. They said, how can I connect to the customer if he's behind the glass? So it's always sort of also a matter of your own perspective. Thailand is very good for the girls. Because in Thailand, the king of Thailand and all main people who run the country, they say there is no prostitution in Thailand. So something that doesn't exist cannot be an industrial structure. So mostly what happens in these places that you see in the movie as well as in go-go bars is that the bar owner only gets a fee for the girl to be taken away from the bar, which is not very high. It's just like the loss of money he has because she's not dancing there, so he cannot set it very high. But the moment she leaves the premises, she takes all the money. She gets 100%. It's between her and the customer. They can never ask any money of her. It's again very, very different because there is a very strange thing. There is thousands of kilometers of where my movie takes place. There is a little city in the heart of Mexico. There is a little city in Mexico that's only run by pimps. And they go around all the country and make young girls fall in love with them. Then they bring them to the village, and then they say, "Darling, I want to show you a wonderful life, but I'm a little short of money. Now you have to go work for me for a while." And then they prostitute them, but purely through love. They make them fall in love with them. Black magic, love, dependency. Those men who they are dependent on are 1,000 kilometers away, and they still give them 100% of their money. And these guys make that with like four girls, and then they make the girls watch each other. They are like professional pimps over generations. They know how to do it. Also, they never oppress the girls in a way that she cannot walk away. They always say, "If you don't want me, go." So it's purely on an emotional or a witchcraft level. So all they need is to have the guts to say on the phone, "Fuck you." And when she says that, she's out. She can work on her own, do whatever she likes. So you see, there is three different structures. Yeah. Everyone is many extremely layers. Complicated, but works in a way for the people.
Kritike, ki letijo na Glavogerjevo delo, mu pogosto očitajo estetizacijo bede novodobnega proletariata. Vprašali smo ga, kako sam odgovarja na tovrstne kritike.
In I don't even know if the realities are so harsh, because in a way all realities are harsh. It's sort of that people like wonder when they see my films that they think this is so harsh, so horrible. But I became to believe that I'm not so sure about that anymore. I see strong people there making a living, and some people say to me, "I couldn't live like that," and I disagree, you know, if you have to. But on the other way, I adapt less and less to some notions that we have in our protected surroundings, because we might be bored to death in a while. The challenges of life often are the good stuff. When you're afraid, it gets good. When you're on the edge, it gets good. When you do stupid things, you have to think about yourself. And also, there is no beauty I can construct. I'm not that good. If there is beauty, there is beauty. I don't even use lights. Maybe I like the people. I see that they look good. That when they see my film, they say, "Oh, I look good."
Were the reactions like that?
Oh, yeah.
They happy with
you? Yeah, most of the time. Like, Cubana, I talked to her when she had this interview where she showed her breasts, and I said, "Were you ashamed of what you said?" She said, no, baby, that's okay. But my tits look good?" That's how people are. And most of the time, they look good in my films. I make films about the beauty of people. And beauty, in a platonic sense, is the splendor of truth. And I have nothing whatsoever to do to make anything beautiful. I don't even know how to do that.
Glavogerja smo povprašali tudi o tehničnih izzivih pri snemanju, velikosti ekipe in bodočih projektih.
Horse Glory was from the lighting situation so, so very difficult that we sometimes have a like grain destruction filter on it and enhance colors, and the print is done digitally. Mm-hmm. But when technology changes, you also change your tools. But up to working man, that's totally analog. There's nothing. It's over. The film is over. It's not over for 35 and feature filmmaking, but for this kind of thing, and not because the technology is gone, there's still the cameras and still the film, but what goes away is the knowledge of the people in the lab. They go into pension. They are not there. The people don't know how to do this kind of job anymore. So you also, as an artist, you have to see what is there and how to use it. I don't say digital is bad. Up to now, I only said I don't know how to use it. Now I'm confronted with that because there is no other way anymore.
And how big was your crew when you were filming that?
Normally, I leave the country with about 5 people, and I hire about 3, 4, or 5 people. Depends on what I need. But this is also like crew who is not on the set, you know, people organizing things, people buying light bulbs, whatever. But the core crew with whom I leave my country is 5 people. I'm working on a film that will be a documentary about mainly nothing, because
nothing.
I think the biggest enemy of documentary filmmaking is a theme and issue. So I try to make a film where I travel the world for 1 year and I have nothing in my hands but a small crew and camera. And whatever I come across, I do a film about. But I like the challenge. It's sort of going back to the megacities days, you know. Megacities was a naive film. I want to go back there again. Megacities, I gave it to somebody and he did a completely new film of it, of all the material.
Really? If you just re-edit it and stuff?
There is a film called A Life in Loops, a Megacities Remix. A completely different film.
Just re-editing the film or outtakes and everything?
Yeah, all. And everything. He shot a few new scenes and he made completely different music. It's like a cover version of my film. Yeah. So I love these things. I'm not so holy about that.
Horse hustle, the hustle is hard. inside and suicide, syphilis and greed. Speak to me, the language of love, the language of violence, the language of the heart. This isn't the first time I've asked for money or love. Heaven and earth don't ever mean enough. Speak to me of heroin and speed. Just give me something I can believe. The whore's hustle of love, hustle is whore. Too many people are out of love. The whore's hustle of love, hustle is whore. Cities may cry to the
Za konec pa smo posneli še del pogovora z občinstvom, ki ga je Glavoger imel po projekciji v Kino dvoru.
I'm curious how much time you spend in each place before you start shooting.
It depends on the place a little, but it's not only the time, it's like a process you have that you find out about the place, you get to know the people and more or less the keys that you come back to the place. Like when people get to know you, it's one thing. And also like these places, or maybe with the exception of Bangladesh, because there is hardly any journalists coming by, but normally there is. And journalists sort of have this attitude. They go in, they steal some pictures in a way, or they just take it, and then the next day you're in the newspaper or in the news, and they say whatever they want to say about the place. So that's sort of the thing you have to overcome, because the people have to start to trust you, that you're not just there for some bad news, but you're there for something serious, or something that also affects them and that they understand what you do.
But maybe as a whole, the whole project is a trilogy that went over many years. You've traveled to many places. For this particular film, like, how should we imagine it in terms of from the original idea to the film? How long did it take?
Then it takes a couple of years, but I also, in these years, I made two other films. Mm-hmm. So don't imagine I'm always there. But what is essential is that it's sort of a procedure, that you go back, that you connect, that you make friends in a way. It only works with places where you can go back. It's not but there is no rule. I cannot answer your question in terms of 1 month. Maybe it's a month, maybe it's 3 months. You know? It's like when it's done, it's done. And the filming is very quick. The whole film was shot in 30 days, 10 days each place. But the preparation and the get to know and the find out, that's a month-long experience.
How it was with the permissions, and did all the customers that appear in the film, I imagine they were all, it was a kind of arranged, they were all paid, I imagine.
No, the customers are the only ones in this film who never saw a penny. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I try to compensate the people. Mm. I also do when they are not asking for it, but prostitutes always ask for money. Mm. And also the mafia who controls them, they want some money. But the customers not. The customers were sort of, I didn't imagine this when I started the film, but it was the easiest, because customers are normally like stigmatized. Everybody thinks they are the bad guys. Mm. So in a way, when they found out that I'm serious about the whole thing, and I give a stage to the people who appear in the film, the girls can say whatever they like, and the customers were coming up to me and said, I've seen you so many times. And then when they found out that I'm serious, they can say what they want. They were very willing to participate. They didn't ask for any money. Mm-hmm.
And there was you never thought of including a European country?
Why should I?
No, it's a question.
I thought of it, but it didn't fit the concept. And I don't think Europe is the middle of the world. The brothel around the corner is as alien for you as the one in Bangladesh.
And the last question, is it a secret of how much was the budget of the film?
2 million euros.
And a big congratulation for cinematographer.
I will tell him.
Thank you.
Another question in the back.
Can you talk about your musical choices in the film? Music seems really important to it, so I was curious about your process.
The process is the harder thing to talk about, because music is not a very intellectual process. If you make it one, then it never works. I think a lot about music, I talk a lot about music, I bring tons of music to my editor, and then she uses very different things, because music works or doesn't. I had the concept when I started out to like include you in my process of thought, that only like powerful, strong, emotional women should sing. So I started out with PJ Harvey, and she's that, you know? And I asked her, and she saw the first rushes, and she said, it's great what you do, but I'm somewhere else. The kind of music you like from me is from the 90s. I don't do this kind of music anymore, but you're most welcome to use my stuff. But I found out more and more that she works only for certain parts, that she works for Mexico, but she doesn't work for Thailand, because Thailand is much more fragile, it's much more floating, it's much more nice in a way. And there, this kind of emotional outburst doesn't work. So I tried a different concept. And also, I was really sure in the beginning that this whole movie is about women. There will be not one customer in the film. Then suddenly the customers came in. And I said, so maybe let's use duets, you know, because maybe this film is more of an interaction film than I thought. And then we started trying out Coco Rosie and Anthony. And also Tricky is a duet, but there is not one song in the film, and that stayed from the beginning concept, that only a man is singing. But in a way, I'm only telling you about the thought process. Music is not really something you can explain. But it was vital to me because prostitution is more than anything else about waiting. The girls, most of the day, are waiting for somebody to come. And when I spend a lot of time to them, I'm waiting with them for waiting what is going to come. So I listen to my music, they listen to their music. But music is vital, otherwise you go crazy. And some of the girls, when they saw the film, like the Mexican women, they loved PJ Harvey. They said, who is this woman? She's, whoa. But I'm talking, but it's a completely different process, because music works or it doesn't. And I don't say that for everybody this music works in the film. It does for me. It's kind of a commentary.
How much did actually, if you think about the starting point of the film and the film itself, how much did it evolve? It completely, you explained now two points where you completely changed. Did this happen all the time on all the levels, or?
Yes, I was at the point of the film. I was close to the decision to have a commentary that I wrote for the whole film, mm-hmm. And the film at that moment was 4 hours long, because there was also
a voiceover or what?
Yeah. I wrote a commentary that was a constant dialogue between a John and a girl. So it was a male voice and a female voice, and they were always debating. I there is a book accompanying the film where you can read this dialogue. It's about 30 pages long. And at one moment in the film, I had the choice to leave off the dialogue or to leave off the music. Mm-hmm. Because those two, like layers, were killing themselves. So I left the music mm-hmm. in the film. Mm-hmm. Maybe next film I do otherwise.
Mm-hmm. To je bila nocojšnja Temna zvezda. Z Mihaelom Glavogerjem je zaglavil gor, v škotskem slogu je tehniciral Lynch, s sončnimi očali sem bral Želc.
Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.